Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/Nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
This is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Psalm 49, Tehillah Mem Tet. Psalm 49 is a wisdom psalm, which makes the poetic form, phrasing, and philosophy similar to Proverbs, the book of Job, and Kohelet. There seem to be two central themes. The first is, you can't buy your way out of death. Everybody dies. The second is, you can't take it with you, no matter how hard you try. Similar to Job, problems arise with how the afterlife is portrayed in this psalm, and how it fits in with the traditional Jewish understanding of the afterlife, and we'll explore that idea a little bit later. Because the phrasing is in Proverbs format, or what's called wisdom format, the language is elusive, and both syntax and semantics are very difficult. We could spend many, many lessons going through all the possibilities of what this psalm may mean, but since that's not the format or the time span of these online lessons, I'll stick to one main interpretation and hint at a few others as I go along. In the first four verses, not including the inscription, the author explains to us that he is about to teach us a wisdom couched in the words of parable and riddle. Lamnatseach livnei Korach mizmor, for the maestro, a psalm by the Korachites. This is, by the way, the last of the series of psalms by the Korachites, which started in Psalm 42. There will be another set from Psalm 84 to 88, excluding Psalm 86. Shimu zot kol ha'amim ha'azinu kol yoshevei chaled. Hear this, all you nations, pay attention, all you mortal dwellers. Chaled could be translated, based on the context, as the whole world. But in Yeshayahu, the letters are transposed, appearing as chadel, which means to cease or to stop. So perhaps here the word chaled has the same sense as the word mortal, which means human, but indicates the mortality of life and how it ceases. Eventually it ceases. The instructor now tells us more about his instructional goals by identifying his desired audience more particularly. Gam b'nei Adam, gam b'nei Ish, yachad, ashir, ve'evyon. Both commoners and nobles together with rich and the poor. Ish is often used in the Bible to denote rich or powerful or notable person. Therefore, based on the second half of the poetic line, the rich and the poor together, I translated Adam as commoner and Ish as noble or nobleman. Notice that I avoided translating B'nai as children, much as B'nai Korach does not mean literally the children of Korach, but the Korachites, and much as B'nai Yisrael means Israelites and not literally the children of Israel. Pi yedaber chochmot vehagut libi tivunot. My mouth will speak wisdoms, and the expressions of my thoughts or of my mind will be for understanding or understandings. Atel mashal ozni eftach bichinor chidati. I will bend my ear to a proverb. I will introduce a riddle with my lyre, which is an instrument. The word chidat means literally riddle, like the puzzle that Shimshon Samson challenged his partygoers to solve. But here, connected with the idea of a parable, a mashal, it really describes the form that wisdom literature, that parables took, which was usually couched in metaphoric and elusive and puzzling language, allowing for multiple levels of meaning, as well as a sense to the audience that there is a deeper understanding to be found once the elusive and poetic and ancient words and phrases could be resolved. Unfortunately, this style, this chidah puzzle style, is going to make our work in translating the psalm a real challenge. Also note that the parable takes on a personification of its own, as if the instructor has to lend his ear towards some universal wisdom. Ate l'mashal ozni, I will lend my ear towards the mashal. And he must tune into that sort of external force in order to express it correctly. And now it seems that what we have in the next verse is a one-line riddle, a one-line parable that the author wants to explore. Lama ira bimeira avon akevai yisubeni. Note the rhyming scheme. Lama ira bimeira. the assonance and alliteration, if not outright rhymes, are common in wisdom literature, and we'll see many, many more in this psalm. What we will also see is the very difficult phrasing, such as in this verse, Avon akevai yisubeni, which may mean the sin or the punishment surrounds my ankles. But one benefit of biblical poetry is that the two sides of a poetic line complement each other. So if we can figure out what the first part of the line says, Lama ira bimeira, is referring to, it should be easier to figure out the second part of the line, Avon akevai yisubeni. I think that bad days here, lama irai, why should I fear, bimei ra, in bad days, is the same as the bad days that we have in Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. There it says, uschoret borecha bimei b'churotecha ad asher lo yavou yemei hara'a vihigiu shanim asher tomar ein li bahem chefetz. And remember your creator in the days of your youth, until the bad days come, until come the years that you'll say, I do not desire them. And from the rest of the chapter, it's evident that those bad days which are coming are the days which lead up to death. Based on this, I would say that Avon Akevai Yisubeni is the final punishment, Avon. And that final punishment is death, which is surrounding him and which is pulling him down by the heels into the grave. I hate to say this, but the best image of this that I've seen is from the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore, where the murderer at the end gets killed and the evil spirits, these black blobs, pull his soul down into the underworld. The parable, therefore, that people say, and that our instructor wants to explore in his own way, is as follows. In what way does one deal with death? In what way can one deal with the fear of death as it pulls you down? So the instructor explores now a wrong way to deal with death or the fear of death. Habotchim al chelam uvrov oshram yithalalu. Those who put faith in their wealth and praise themselves or boost themselves up with their great wealth. Ach lo pado yifteish lo yitain lelohim kofro. Now this verse would have been easier had ach been spelt aleph kaf, meaning rather or but, since it contradicts the incorrect thinking of the wealthy from the previous verse that their money will somehow save them. But it is spelled aleph chet, meaning brother. So in modern English, you might want to say something like, oh brother, like a call to the audience, such as, brother, let me tell you something. But this doesn't work in biblical use as well. So I'll translate ach as the object of the sentence, and I think it means the following. A nobleman will surely not be able to redeem his brother, since he won't be able to pay his, i.e. his brother's, ransom to the judges. It's the old story of the hangman who asks money for the family to pay off the murderer, and he keeps on taking more and more money until they have nothing left, and then he hangs the guy anyway. Remember that this took place not only this idea of trying to pay off for a death penalty, did not only occur in Westerns in the United States, but even the Torah specifically warns us about a murderer. It warns us not to take payments or kofar to pay off the death penalty. So it's obvious that this kind of behavior has been a problem for quite some time. I've translated Elohim here not as God, but as judges, although there's an element of God here as well, because the metaphor is just like you can't pay judges all the money they want to get somebody out of a death penalty, so too you could pay all the money in the world, but you're not going to make God change his system, which is that people die. V'yekar pidyon nafsham v'chadal le'olam. The redemption price for their souls is too expensive, and they will cease forever. Note the word chadal plays off the word chaled that we had before, who the instructor called on to listen to his wisdom. I think that the sense here is that the price will go higher and higher until the negotiations and the life under negotiations ceases. The next verse seems to be a rhetorical question, whose answer is no. V'chi od la'netzach lo yir'eh ha'shachat. Do you think that he, i.e. the rich guy, will continue to live forever by trying to pay off death, that he won't see the grave. Shachat means grave, and it comes from the word destruction, giving us our first sense of the horror of the underworld, but it won't be our last here in this psalm, as we will see. Ki yir'eh chachamim yamutu yachag ksil vavar yovedu ve'azavu la'achirim chelam. Indeed, when one see, what one does see is that the wise die and the foolish and the boorish both perish, and they all abandon their wealth to others. The they here seems to be all of them, the wise and the foolish. So the wise seem to die yamutu, which according to the commentators is a hope that after death there is something, some reward to be received. The ksil and the va'ar, they're yovedu, as if they're lost forever. They will receive no reward in the world to come. But either way, whether you're foolish or wise, the money simply doesn't go with you. It cannot be used to stave off death. So what happens with those rich ones, the ones who do die? Kirbam batemo le'olama mishkanotam l'dor vador karu bishmotam ale adamot. Ibn Ezra suggests that we change kirbam, their midst, to kivaram, their graves. Not that he thinks that there's an error in the wording, but sometimes in biblical Hebrew, you have something called an antithesis, which is where letters change around. That's why kesev for sheep is sometimes keves. And there are other cases of letters switching around. So here, he doesn't want the word kirbam, which means in their midst, but he believes that it means their grave. And therefore, the way that Ibn Ezra understands this verse, and the way I'll translate it, is their graves are their eternal homes, their dwelling places forever and ever. They are called after their names on earth, i.e. after their names that are on plots of earth. This is referring to the name that they put on their grave markers, these massive tombstones, the sarcophagi, which identify who lays here, and not only who lays here, but that it is a very rich and wealthy man that lays here. And this kind of naming of the grave, of putting a monument on the grave, was really only for the rich at the time who could afford such stones. But unfortunately, that was all their wealth could buy them as far as an internal life. The best that they could do is take their money to buy a monument that perhaps when people walk by, they'll say, oh, there lies so-and-so, and that would be his claim to fame. If we don't play with the word kirbam and we leave it as it is, we might get the translation that they plan forever houses and dwelling with their names on their property to be handed out to their kids and thus be remembered. Some kind of idea where a person builds these nice houses and puts their name on it, like the Rabbi Levi estate. And that way, when their kids inherit it, their names live on. But I think that the first way, Ibn Ezra's, is the better of the choices. And now we get to the second foolishness that leads men not to be afraid of death: the misconception that you could take it with you. Remember that the Egyptians and the Babylonians, although only the rich and powerful among them, since commoners had no religion in ancient Egypt. In fact, an eternal soul was the right of the ruling class only. Thank you very much. Anyway, the peoples of the ancient Near East would stuff their graves with wealth to be taken with them or to accompany them in the afterlife. The pyramids, in fact, were the pièce de résistance of this idea taken ad absurdum. V'adam bikar bal yalin nimshal kabehemot nidmu. For a man does not lay down, that is, lay down to die with his wealth. He is, rather, like the silenced beasts. This theme shows up in Kohelet chapter 3 as well, the idea that you can't take it with you. It says there, Ki mikre b'nei ha'adam u'mikre ha'beima u'mikre echad lahem, ki modzeh, kein modzeh, ruach echad lakol, u'motar ha'adam min ha'beima ayin, ki akol havel. Loose translation, because what happens to man is what happens to beasts. The death of one is like the death of another. The man has no advantage. He literally has no profit, a motar, over the animal, since all is fleeting. Now, that is not to say, God forbid, that the author of our psalm or the author of Kohelet is denying the afterlife. What they are denying is that you could put the profits of this world in a layaway, so to speak. Zed darkam kesel lamo v'acharehem b'fihem yirtzu sela. This, their way, that is their approach that you can take it with you, is foolishness for them. Now, the second part of this verse is difficult, to say the least, but Ibn Ezra and Radak Rabbi David Kimchi, both cite an opinion that it means after them, acharehem, their kids, meaning what comes after their kids, will want what they spoke of, yirtzu bifihem, sela, meaning that that not only do these rich people who try to put it all in the grave for them, to take it with them, not only do they poison themselves or fool themselves, but they poison and fool their kids as well, who are the only ones who actually might profit from some accumulated wealth of their parents. So the kids will waste it in the same vain attempts at taking it with you that they learn from their parents. Or worse, they might even take their own funds or their parents' funds and feed it to their dead relatives. According to scholars, this is exactly the kind of behavior that existed in ancient Egypt. And in fact, scholars say this was the death of the old kingdom of Egypt with its great pyramids. Not only were the pyramids built for the dead, but the temples and fields were built around the pyramid in order to feed the soul of the departed. And what this did was it sucked life out of the economy until it all collapsed. So instead of parents building something to feed their kids, the kids sacrificed their money and themselves to feed their parents in the afterlife. The sela at the end of this verse is perhaps to mark off this wisdom from the next section, which describes the horror of the underworld, an underworld that apparently is configured for those whom money is the only thing, and for those who imagine that they can control the afterlife with their wealth, an insidious form of idol worship. Katzon lishol shatu Mavet yireim vayirdu vam yisharim vitzuram levalot sheol mizavul lo. They are placed like flocks in Sheol. Sheol is the underworld, a place of darkness where the dead go down to suffer. It is not like the Christian idea of a literal hell, and in fact is probably understood by the Jewish people as a metaphor. But whether literal or not, the imagery is difficult to imagine, and the words here are difficult to understand, other than the general point that the person that tried to take it with him, so to speak, is not the shepherd, but becomes the sheep. Mavit yireim, death will devour them. Mavit was the god of the underworld in pre-Israelite tradition in Canaan. And while non-metaphoric biblical texts never refer to Mavit as a god, as anything but a simple state of death, because it is outside the pale of the religion to consider of any entity controlling death other than God, in metaphoric texts, in these mashals, in these wisdom texts, since the audience knows that they are metaphoric, they permit themselves, the wisdom, the instructor permits themselves to paint a personification of death, much as we've seen personifications of the mighty oceans in previous Psalms. So here we have the Lord of Sheol, which is Mavet, who is feeding on the souls. Vayirdu, literally, of course, it means that the body rots in the grave. Vayirdu vam yisharim laboker, and the straight ones will rule over them until morning. Hard to say what this means. Yisharim might be the minions of Sheol, some supernatural creatures of the underworld, since angels are described as not being able to sleep or bend or in fact turn at all from their path. So perhaps here that's what it means by the Yisharim. And morning may be the time of Mashiach, when perhaps all of these souls will be forgiven or resurrected. Again, the text itself is difficult, calling on the most ancient idioms and imagery. Vitzuram levalot sheol mizavul lo, but their forms will wither in Sheol from being a house for them. And this seems perhaps to take it back to the beginning. It mocks the houses that they build for themselves, these massive monuments where they put their names in order to weather the afterlife. The underworld grabbed them and ate away their only true house, their only true zavul, the person's body itself. And finally, the instructor puts us on the right path with an assertion that only God can help after this life is over. Note how the description of how God, Elohim, can redeem is in contrast with the rich person's attempt to redeem, in both cases the word poded, to redeem the lives from judges in back in verse 8. Ach Elohim yifdeh nafshi miyad sheol ki yikacheni sela. Only God can redeem my life from the hands of Sheol when he, presumably the personified Sheol or personified Mavet, or perhaps when God will take me Sela. This is the sense of the afterlife, a world to come for those who are redeemable. That is, only those can be brought out of Sheol, the ones who put their faith in God. And now some of the same wisdom seems to be repeated, but not in parable or riddle form. So what we have now is less metaphor and more straight to the point, perhaps for those who had a hard time with the metaphor. Al tira ki yashir ish ki yirbek vo beito. Don't fear when a person becomes rich, when their honor, in the sense of their money and their power of his house, is increased. Ki lo v'moto yikach hakol lo yered acharav kvodo, because he can't take any of it with him. In his death, his honor will not follow him down. Ki nafsho b'chayav yivarech v'yoducha ki tetiv lach. I think that this is another thing not to be afraid of. It means don't be afraid when, ki, he blesses himself. B'chayav nafsho yivarech. He blesses himself. It's as if he's looking himself in a mirror and he says the next part of the verse, which is in second person, Yoducha ki tetiv lach. They praise you when things are going well for you. Tavo ad dor avotav ad netzach lo yiru or. He will come to the door, the generation of his ancestors, who will never see light again, which means just like his ancestors died, he will die as well. The meaning is that the light in this world will disappear, or perhaps because of their self-absorption, even the next life, they will not have light as well. And finally, a play on the previous line, verse 13, where it says a person does not lay down with his wealth. Vadam bikar bal yalin. Here at the end of the poem, the instructor teaches, Adam bikar velo yavin nimshal kabehemot nidmu. A person's wealth will never bring him to understanding. Rather, he is like silent beasts, not silent in death, like in verse 13, but silent in their lack of wisdom and understanding, because all they do is rely on money.